And so if you're not living in a place that has a lot of immigrants or a lot of tourists, then you might not even really be that exposed by nature to other ways of thinking and other ways of living. And so I think that's why travel is so important.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to My Non-Expert Opinion. I'm your host, Chelsea Reif, and I'm also a podcast strategist who helps people launch and grow their podcast. So I was just recently on a podcast and someone said that I was the person they think of when they think of digital nomad lifestyle. And if you think I know a lot about digital nomad lifestyle, then you need to go get a notebook and pen for today's episode because Kristen Wilson is the ultimate digital nomad expert. She actually wrote the book Digital Nomads for Dummies. Yes, that series of books. She wrote the one for digital nomads. She has a podcast called Badass Digital Nomads. And her YouTube channel, Traveling with Kristen, is for those interested in pursuing the digital nomad lifestyle. Kristen has been at this way longer than I have, and her whole platform is on helping people explore this type of living. So in today's episode, we talk about this lifestyle and the cost advantages of living in different countries with lower costs. We talk about our different experiences of how we manage our expenses, especially in different locations. We get into the difference between slow travel, long-term expat living, and fast-paced travel, as well as burnout and finding a balance between work life and personal life. There's a lot more that's covered in this episode, like how to make friends, how certain destinations blow up in popularity because of social media, and why Americans tend to have a superiority complex. So if you're curious about all this, then stay tuned and listen to the entire episode. Just a quick reminder before we listen to Kristen's incredible advice. Anyone that leaves a review during the month of October, I will enter you into a giveaway to win a 20-minute laser coaching session with me. We can talk about digital nomad lifestyle. We can talk about podcasting, storytelling, and setting up your calendar to work for you. Whatever you want, these 20 minutes are all yours, and all you have to do is leave a review on Apple Podcasts. So head over to my show in My Non-Expert Opinion, scroll down, write that review, take a screenshot, and then send it to info@chelseareif.com. And I will put your name into the hat and draw it at the end of October to see if you are the winner of this 20-minute laser coaching session. All right, I'm not kidding when I said you need a notebook and pen. So go pause, grab one, and then let's get into this week's episode with Kristen Wilson. Kristen Wilson, also known as Traveling with Kristen on YouTube, the host of Badass Digital Nomads podcast, and the author of Digital Nomads for Dummies. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Chelsea. It's great to be here.
I know you are so well-versed in digital nomad lifestyle, and I have so many people interested in understanding how you actually make this happen. And so I just want to get straight into understanding how you built this life for yourself. So why don't you tell us where you are right now?
Right now, I'm in Northern England in Manchester, and I've been here for a few months just kind of exploring around the north because a lot of people go to London when they come to the UK, right? So I wanted to just see a different part of the countryside. And I'm also a part-time DJ and music producer. So I wanted to kind of immerse myself in the music scene here and yeah, just get to know a different side of the UK. So that's what I like to do is combine work with pleasure and hobbies and goals and kind of blend everything together into a lifestyle where I'm working remotely, but I'm also traveling and I'm pursuing my hobbies and other personal interests.
So I'm in London right now and I go to Manchester next week. So funny small world how I feel like that's how digital nomad lifestyle works.
Yeah. Well, I'll be at a conference next week, but hopefully we can coordinate to meet up.
Yeah, that would be incredible. I love Manchester. My friends make fun of me because they're like, what? Like London is the bigger city. I'm like, I just, like you said, I love seeing different parts of Manchester people. I love them.
They're so nice.
So nice. A lot of people are so interested in the digital nomad lifestyle. And I don't think people realize there's different styles of doing this, right? There's slow travel. There's long-term expats, there's people that just backpack around the world. I'm curious, what's your style?
Yeah, so I started off as a slow traveler or almost like a long-term expat because the first time I lived abroad, I was 20 years old and I did a study abroad program in Costa Rica and then also in Australia. So I did about 6 months in each country. And then when I moved back abroad, I stayed for 8 years in Costa Rica and 1 year in Nicaragua. So I always kind of had a home base that I would then travel from, whether it was throughout Latin America or taking trips to Europe and Bali and Southeast Asia. But when I became a full-time digital nomad in January of 2013, that's when I started doing more of a fast-paced travel. So I had a one-way ticket around the world with no end date in sight. And sometimes I would spend a month somewhere or a week somewhere or a day or so in different cities. And so I did that for quite a few years up until the pandemic. And that's when I really slowed down and I went back to Florida for 2 years and was just staying there near family. And it wasn't until the end of 2022 that I started traveling again. And I've kind of been doing it still in a slow travel way because I work full-time online. I create a lot of content for YouTube and my podcast. So although I love traveling, I feel like I'm outgrowing the phase of just traveling for the sake of travel. And now I like it to be more intentional. Like, why am I going to this place? And I want to stay there as long as I can, as long as my passport will allow, and get to know the people and the culture. So I did 3 months in Portugal last year, and then 6 months here in the UK. And then I'll be going to Amsterdam for a month and then back to Florida for the holidays. And then next year, I'll probably pick 2 or 3 home bases throughout the year and then just do side trips from there. Like from here in Manchester, I've gone to New York, Amsterdam, other cities around the UK, London, Liverpool, York. So I like to kind of leave my stuff in one spot and then just take a carry-on or a backpack and travel for the weekends from there.
Okay. I need to take a page out of that book because my baggage fees are killing me lately. It has been so bad. Also, I'm from Florida as well. So I think that's just so interesting. We have so many overlapping similarities, but I am now in the phase of kind of doing the 4 to 6 weeks in a place, but I will tell you, I am getting very exhausted. And as someone who gets a podcast, I get it. Like, you just want a place to go and record your content and not have to like rent a studio or pray to God that your Airbnb actually has some type of good walls that won't echo and bounce all the sound around. So it can be so hard as a content creator. And I'm curious, because you've been creating content for so long, how did you manage that when you were bopping around from country to country or city to city?
I started traveling and living abroad so far before iPhones and Instagram and even good internet. So I feel like I just lived in this parallel universe where no one knew where I was or what I was doing for many, many years. And those were the years that I, you know, made friends in these countries and lived a pretty normal lifestyle and even learned the process of moving to foreign countries, relocating myself there and other people there, and figuring out how to do that, like how to move from your home country to somewhere else. What is the process of the logistics? And then what is the process of adapting to that culture? So I really spent about 12 years, 15 years doing that before I started creating content. So once I started creating content in 2017, I basically just documented what I was doing, and I still didn't know how to edit videos or do anything like that. So I kind of spent 6 months filming stuff, and then I had to sit down and figure out, what do I do with all of this content? And then once I started launching my channel in 2018 and building in 2019, I found it a lot harder to travel and do that at the same time, because as you know, there's a big cost of time and money and resources every time you change locations. And that's hard enough when you're just working online in a remote job, or you're doing some freelance work, like some writing or graphic design or coding. But it's a whole nother thing when you're also documenting your life on video for YouTube and then also producing a weekly podcast. So that's when I really started feeling burnt out. And I actually did burn out. And I slowed down and then I started going places for longer because I couldn't do it all. And then if I was traveling with other people, they were always annoyed with me because I was filming all the time or editing all the time, and I wasn't much fun to be around. So by slowing down, that allows you to get your work done and also have a personal life, and then also get to go sightseeing and have fun.
Oh my gosh, totally relate to the burning out, that you end up in a place that you're like, I've been planning this forever. I was looking forward to it. And I don't even want to get out of this bed. Like, I just want to lay down. I have to say no to people because I'm exhausted. And I think that's probably
a pushback area where people that are considering this lifestyle is like, how do you not make it exhausting? And it sounds like it's slow travel. Do you have any other tips around not burning out?
Yeah, I think when you first start in this lifestyle, you need to have a good routine and a good habits and be in a secure job and financial position, because you don't want to be worrying about how are you going to find clients or make money or pay the bills while you're also a full-time travel agent for yourself. And so really get that dialed in before you start traveling. I know there's stories of people who bought a one-way ticket to Thailand and happily ever after, and they're living on $1,000 per month, but that's a choice, right? And there's other ways of doing it. So I would say to make sure that you're set in your job and your routine before you start traveling. Try the slow travel lifestyle first and adjust as you go. So if you feel like you're bored and you can go more places, then you can speed up and then you can throttle it down. If you're feeling burnt out, you could go home for a while. I've even had home bases for 1 year leases where I was only there for a few months per year, but just knowing that I had a home to go back to was really comforting to me, and I could leave all of my stuff there and I could go back and forth if I wanted. So that's another option. And then another thing is you could link up with one of the traveling tribes like Remote Year or Wi-Fi Tribe or Hacker Paradise, because they do all of the planning for you when it comes to where to stay and internet. And I think Remote Year even can do your flights. I'm not sure. So that can save time. But then on the other hand, you're traveling with people. And so if you're not a super extrovert, you could then be exhausted by traveling with 20 or 30 people 24/7 and then just always being around people. So that's kind of something to consider as well.
Oh, 100%. So I actually did Remote Year last year. I did a 4-month trip and then I did two more 1 months. And if you do a 12-month trip or a 4-month trip, they do take care of the flights. Like, that's part of your package. But the 1 month, obviously, you figure out your way there and back. But yeah, speaking of like logistical nightmares, that's to me the hardest thing, right? A lot of us have jobs or we're starting a side hustle and we're just trying to keep our business afloat. And now add all this extra, you know, cognitive overload of, is this safe? And how much is it going to cost? And where do I eat? I think those companies do a really good job of just eliminating a lot of that, which is so helpful. So definitely recommend a group. But to your point, I was also exhausted after that. And after my 4 month, I went fully off the grid and did not speak to anybody for like 3 weeks. I went to Croatia during the off season to an island and literally like did not talk to anybody. So I think it does come in an ebb and flow period. And the more and more I travel, I've gone to like a new country every month this year. And I'm like, I think it's time to slow travel and settle down. And what perked up my ears was actually when you just said getting a year-long lease and having that comfort of like, this is mine for at least a year. I can leave my stuff. I can come and go as I please. But my antenna went up of like, oh, but when you're gone, are you paying the rent or do you sublet? Like, did you make sure that you could sublet? Because that's a really interesting option to me.
Yeah. Well, first, do you feel like you had more or less time or the same time when you were on Remote Year? Like, as far as your working hours were concerned, was it like a wash?
Oh, less time. I remember telling this person that I was hanging out with all the time. I'm like, I feel like I'm not working. Like, it was almost like, when am I doing my job? Like, I would have to play periods of catch up. And it was definitely a choice, right? Like, I was choosing to socialize more than I was really committing to working or launching anything. But I found it hard to want to even commit to work because I was like, ooh, I'm with 27 people that we all want to do the same thing. It's hard to say no.
Yeah, I found that too. I think another option could be going to a co-living space that's fixed. Like, I spent a month or so in a co-living space in Tokyo, and it was mostly with Japanese people. So I didn't even, they don't speak English. I didn't speak Japanese, you know, it's like we were in the same building together, but it was like more privacy. So that's an option too. But as far as having a home base, it is expensive to keep a home base when you're not there. I have had long-term leases where I was allowed to sublet or Airbnb when I was gone. And I did that. I had a boyfriend and he was paying the rent when I wasn't there. I mean, I still paid for part of it, but I wasn't paying for a full 2-bedroom apartment. I was just paying for half of it. So that saves the money. And then also, if you get a rental in a very affordable place, you can get a really nice place for a few hundred dollars per month in Thailand. And even if you're there for 3 months and then gone for 3 months, you have some place to come back to. And so you could do that in Latin America and Eastern Europe. I don't recommend doing it in London or anywhere that's really expensive, but I'll probably do that next year, like go to Albania or Serbia or Romania or somewhere where I can get a really nice apartment for less than $1,000 per month and then just leave it when I'm not there.
Oh my gosh, you just said Albania, which is so funny to me because I'm going to Albania next month. And my friend and I were making a joke like, oh, if, you know, it feels like a new up and coming hotspot because someone we ran into is going to Albania. And then all of a sudden, three more people in the last week have said they were going to Albania. And it made me think of how certain countries and cities have this like glow up period. And all of a sudden, everyone wants to go there, right? Like it happened with Tulum. It happened in Croatia. It happened a little bit with Montenegro. And for some reason... Yeah, Bali. Oh my God. Everyone in the world moved to Bali at one point. And I'm curious, because you've been in this world for so long, what do you think makes a destination like that pop off?
I think it's content. I think with Bali, it was the Instagram blow up of just the timing that people were going to Bali. And then the Instagram posts that were very aspirational and polished travel posts. And a lot of that, like get paid to travel sort of thing was happening. So I think that happened. It's also probably also the fault of like YouTubers and podcasters and bloggers, because Portugal is experiencing that right now. And yeah, what word gets out. And then when there's co-working spaces and co-living spaces and digital nomad conferences and events and groups like Remote Year. And then when everyone's going there at the same time, it just increases the profile of the place. And then the mainstream media picks up on it and it's like, it continues snowballing. So I think it's interesting, but the world is a big place and everybody right now, the majority of people that are living this lifestyle, I would say have been doing it since the pandemic. As like a percent of the nomads. There were obviously digital nomads way before then, but the digital nomad population has like quintupled in the past 2 years. So I think as more people hit those points of burnout and they start to gain more confidence and trust in themselves and their own singular life path and their intuition, they're going to start being more adventurous in the places that they go. And they're not going to care as much if it's an up-and-coming destination or if it has a high profile. I think those places attract people who are new to the lifestyle because they want that community. It's almost like a comfort zone. And then once you've been on the road, you're like road hardened for a few years, then you don't mind solo traveling to an island in Croatia by yourself or, you know, to the middle of Central Asia. Maybe you want to go to Uzbekistan for 6 months or something, and you feel self-sufficient, like you can do it. So I think in the long term, everything will even out and there might be some digital nomad capitals or hotspots or maybe some islands like Canary Islands and Madeira and places that a lot of people congregate. But I think there will also be a more equal distribution of remote workers and globetrotters all around the world that are just integrating into normal life in these places. And maybe they meet someone and get married or have babies or they get a different job. And we just kind of, it's like this mass migration, but of all different paces of travel, short term, medium term, long term, and even permanent immigration.
Totally agree. You mentioned the word community. And I know a lot of people listening to this podcast are millennial women who want to do their first solo trip and just start seeing the world. And they're really scared of making friends. And they're either introverts or they've just never done something like this. And it can feel really, really intimidating to just show up to a new country, especially if you don't speak the language, and try to make friends. And I'm curious if you have maybe three tips that you could share around making friends while traveling.
Yeah, I was very scared when I first started. And when I was landing in Costa Rica for the first time, I was crying on the plane because I was 20 years old and I was terrified and I had never been out of the country by myself before. And I think I slept for 2 days because I was like scared and depressed. But then once you start to get to know the people in the neighborhood, and I was going to a language school there, and I was living with a host family, and I just started to integrate. And by the end of the first week, I was having the time of my life. So you'll definitely feel those feelings at first, but they will eventually go away. And I actually just did a video about solo travel on my YouTube channel on traveling with Kristen. So people can search for that. And I give 15 tips about solo travel. But the first thing to do is to, you know, go to a place that interests you. Like if you're naturally interested in a destination, you're going to find things that you like to do there. So if you're a really avid skier or snowboarder, you might go to the French Alps or to Whistler and Vancouver or to Hokkaido, Niseko in Japan. Like you're going to go to a place where you like to do that activity or you're interested in that culture. And then you're going to meet other like-minded people there just naturally. But you can also reach out to people before you get there. So you can use Facebook groups and look for digital nomad groups or groups of foreigners, groups of entrepreneurs, anything around a certain interest in that location. And you'll find really big groups there with events going on. You can also look at Facebook events or use other apps like meetup.com. I've used that so many times for sushi making classes and dinner parties and all sorts of fun stuff. 5K races, running clubs are a good one. And then there's also a website called Internations. It's internations.org, and it's specifically for people who are living abroad. So I just went to an Internations meetup in Manchester last week, and I met people from Croatia, Brazil, South Africa, Lebanon, everywhere, all around the world, probably like 20 different countries in 1 hour. And so once you go to a place and you just go to one or two events, whether it's a digital nomad related or like a local hiking club or something like that, you'll just start to meet one person at a time, and each one person can be a window into the social circle of that person, and you'll just start to integrate naturally. So that's where I would start.
Love those tips. I just did an episode about how to make friends as an adult, and that was one of the tips, was networking events. And it sounds like you're going to similar things because everyone there clearly aligns on something, right? If it's an expat event or a pottery making class, like clearly you share an interest. So that can be your opening point, right? Like what brought you into pottery, or oh, how long have you been running? Like you can immediately find the connection point and just build on that. So I love that
tip. And you might end up finding out that the people you meet when you travel, you have more in common with than your friends from high school or your friends from college. And that can happen pretty often too.
Oh, 100%. That's something actually I mentioned in the episode, was that my high school friends and I, we don't relate on a lot of things anymore because I have my own business and I travel, and that's not something that they do. So my friendships have changed, and I've had to make new friends that live this lifestyle. And I've done a lot of it by some of the methods you just said.
Yeah.
I have a question about passport strength. So something people always say is the US is a really strong passport, or that country is a really weak passport. And for anyone that doesn't know what that means, can you explain?
Yeah, this is a very antiquated system of assigning. It's not really assigning a value to a passport. It's just that collectively there's this global order, right? We have Eastern countries, Western countries, first world countries, developing countries, countries that rank high on terror threats and things like that. And so depending on which country you're from, your country will have different status when it comes to traveling to another country for tourism. So you might have visa-free travel in a certain number of countries. Well, every country has visa-free travel with some countries, but depending on your passport, you might have 100 countries, you might have 40 countries that you can travel to without applying for a visa. And so this unfairly affects people from countries in the Middle East, certain countries in Asia. I had a girl on my podcast from Vietnam who was telling me, you know, I can only go to these different countries. So if you're from the US, Canada, most countries in Europe, some countries in Latin America, wealthier countries like Japan, countries that are not seen as high risk for you to travel on vacation and then never come back home. Those would be the countries that have more options for visa-free travel. And so if you're not from one of those countries, then if you want to go on vacation somewhere, you might have to apply for a visa online. And that can have different requirements, like showing proof of income or other things that are basically proving that you have ties to your home country and you're not going to abandon your country and stay illegally somewhere else. You might have to pay extra fees. And in some cases, you might have to go to an embassy or a consulate in person and wait in line to apply for certain visas. And there will be only a limited amount per year. So it's something that is very unfair, but luckily it's changing because more countries are offering digital nomad visas now that you can apply for from any country. And also the travel insurance company Safety Wing is trying to create a global passport where they're basically creating a country on the internet and they will be negotiating bilateral or multilateral treaties or agreements with different countries to let their citizens, so their passport holders, travel to those countries without a visa. So that way, if you're from Vietnam, if you're from Afghanistan, if you're from Somalia, if you're from some places where you have a limited number of visa-free travels, you could actually apply for, I think it's called Pluvia, I think is the name of their country. You could apply for one of their passports, and then they would be negotiating on behalf of their population of citizens to get you visa-free travel into Europe, into the US, into Canada, into Mexico, or wherever. So it's kind of a complicated topic, but basically it depends where you're born. And that gives you the option of traveling without a visa to 10, 20, 120 different countries.
Wow. Okay, Safety Wing. Amazing, innovative idea. That is so incredible. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's not official yet. It's just in development, but it's a company that was founded by digital nomads from Norway. So they understood the plight of other digital nomads, basically. Like, I have a friend, she's from Kenya, and it's the same thing. You know, it's sad because, like, she can't travel to certain places where other US citizens can just on a whim at the drop of a hat be like, oh, I think I'm going to go to this country. I think I'll go to that country. And it's like, it might take her 30 days or 60 days or never to be able to get a visa to go to that country just because she was born in Kenya. And it's ridiculous.
Totally agree. When I was on remote year, my program leader was from South Africa and he was supposed to travel with us for the whole 4 months. And we started in Cape Town and then went to Europe. And literally the night before, when we were all packing up ready to go to Europe, he let us know that his visa actually got denied. And so they had to replace him. And we had to find a whole nother program leader to travel with us, which was really sad because we all bonded with him. He did such an amazing job of creating community for us. And then, like you said, just because he was born in South Africa, he wasn't able to join us on the Europe leg.
Yeah, it's really like a discriminatory, racist system when you think about it. When you look at the lists of passport rankings and which countries are at the top and which countries are at the bottom. Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm really happy to hear that that's changing. Something that I posted on my Instagram the other day, which riled up a few people, and I would love to get your opinion, is I did an observation about being an American and just seeing cool little micro moments in other cultures. And, you know, Denmark, they leave their babies outside because it's so safe. And like, I find Germans have really dark humor, but the way they spend their days is actually like not dark at all. They're like gardening and biking and cooking. And so it's funny to me that they have dark humor, just these like little observations like that. And I ended it with saying, as an American, I notice Americans tend to have a bit of a superiority complex. And some people didn't like that. And I'm just curious, being an American and traveling all over the world, what are just some general things that Americans could either do better or that we're just known for that people really like?
Yeah, I think there's a stereotype of friendly Americans, but then also maybe arrogant Americans. And I've been doing a lot of research into this because the world has changed a lot in the past 100 years to 150 years. Like, even the foods that we eat, a lot of them did not exist even a few years ago or a decade ago or 50 years ago. Technology is changing so fast. And so everyone who's alive today in the past 100 years was born into a system where it's basically post-World War I and post-World War II. And after World War II, the US became a superpower. And so we grew up in an era where the US had a lot of power and the whole world is using the dollar as a reserve currency. And we don't really learn other languages in the US because English is the international business of language. And so I don't think it's anything that any of us as US citizens intend to do, but in a way, we're geographically isolated between two oceans. A lot of people don't have passports. It's expensive to travel off of the continent or even across the United States. It's absurdly expensive because we don't have good public transportation. And so we just end up being a very wealthy, very powerful population that doesn't have much integration with other cultures besides the people who move to our country. And so if you're not living in a place that has a lot of immigrants or a lot of tourists, then you might not even really be that exposed by nature to other ways of thinking and other ways of living. And so I think that's why travel is so important. And it's up to each person. You know, the longer you travel, it's like peeling back the layers of an onion, and you'll start to examine yourself more and your beliefs more, and even question where those beliefs come from. You could change your political affiliation. You could change your religious affiliation. You could stop being religious. You could change your mind on what foods you decide to eat and what type of health and wellness modalities you ascribe to. I mean, you kind of become affected in tiny ways by each place that you go. It is, I think, maybe the first time that you go overseas. Like, I know I can remember the first time I went to Italy, the first time I went to Mexico, the first time I went to Canada. Like, you're going to experience some culture shock, like, no matter where you're from and where you're going. And it took me about 7 years before I started to really, I think, change at a deep level and reject certain things that I had been told and that I had been taught in the US and decide to unlearn and relearn things in a new way. And that is humbling in itself. And every country has propaganda, and every country wants to present things in school that we're the good guys or we're the best or whatever, except maybe Germany. And so, yeah, we grow up in the public school system that's really showing us a one-sided version of history and a one-sided version of reality. And then you get abroad and you realize, like, oh, hey, things actually aren't what I thought, or these people are actually really nice. And I don't know why I was afraid of them or why I was afraid to go to their country. And so I think that's what is really like the big theme of Americans traveling abroad. And that's why it's so important. But I do think that other people accept us, and, you know, maybe we have some like quirky stereotypes and things like that. But I think that generally in the world, people really admire our work ethic, our tenacity, our innovation, and also the entertainment that we produce, because many people in other countries grew up with our TV shows either subtitled or dubbed. And so American culture and American food and American media has really seeped into every corner of the world.
That is so fascinating to hear some of the research that you said you found. And that was something I had said in the post, was that I think the complex that we have is just from what we learn in school and see in the media. It's not that we actually think that we're better than anybody else. It's just when that's what you're consuming all the time, and you're isolated, and then again, around a bunch of English-speaking people that also don't travel a lot. Like you said, you kind of just end up in this bubble that you don't even realize until it gets right. Popped a bit, and then you go travel.
Yeah, or a little bit in a fishbowl over there. Whereas, you know, in Europe, you can go to 3 countries in a day if you want, or 4 or 5. Like, you just take the train from one country to another with no borders. And
oh my gosh.
Different languages and different cultures. And I think that if it was like that in the US, where every state was, even our states are bigger than countries and other places, you know, so it's just very wide distances that people have to travel to get places. And we don't really have like good high speed trains and things like that. It's like a $500 to $800 plane ticket to go from one coast to the other. And it's the same in Canada, even more expensive maybe. So Yeah, we're up against a lot. So awareness is really key. Awareness and humility.
Well, that brings me then to my final question, which is finances and cost. I used to think that this lifestyle would cost so much money. Like when I would see everyone traveling to Bali and Tulum and everything, I'm like, everyone either must be making multiple six figures or be a millionaire. And it wasn't until I started realizing how different costs of living changed in certain countries and even, you know, beauty services and rent. And a personal trainer in Argentina costs $14 an hour versus in Orlando, it was $80 an hour. And so you just start to see how different people live. But I think a lot of people listening do think you have to make multiple six figures. And I'm curious, what is just some general financial advice or budgeting tips that you have for people that are interested in this lifestyle?
Yes, I would say that for anyone considering this lifestyle, you can probably lower your cost of living by adopting a flexible location independent lifestyle, or you can at worst keep it the same. You can definitely spend more if you're staying in hotels and you're changing countries every month and you're doing a lot of tourism and sightseeing. But if you're just living a normal lifestyle in another country where you're staying there for a few months or a year, then you can drastically reduce your cost of living. Like I first realized this in 2003 when I was living in Australia in a beachfront apartment for like $200 a month. And my dorm in Orlando, Florida was, I think, $600 or $800 a month. And I thought, how could I be living in a two-bedroom beachfront apartment with my roommate? We're each paying $200 a month. And my dorm's three or four times more expensive to live in Orlando. And so that's when I felt like I had the wool pulled above my eyes and I could just see the light and I never looked back. And so you can move to a place where the average cost of living, I just did a video on 10 places to live under $1,000 per month. And yeah, you could actually pay rent in another country for the same price as your electricity bill in your home country, potentially. And so you can save a lot of money. I spend about, when I was living in Miami during the pandemic, now this is with the cost of living crisis, I would easily spend $1,000 per month on groceries because the food in the US is so expensive. And that doesn't include going out to eat. That was like $800 to $1,000 a month on groceries. And here in Europe, I spend probably 200 euro, maybe 300, if that's like buying whatever I want. And yeah, everything is just a little bit less. The utilities are less, the rent is less, the food is less, like going out to eat costs less. There's certain things that might be similar, like a specialty coffee or a cocktail that can be similar prices. But in general, you're just saving money across the board. And I went on a road trip with my friend through the south of France, and we were doing wine tastings. And I think our Airbnb in Lyon was $50 a night. And then we would go out to the vineyards during the day. You'd have lunch at a chateau for 12 euro, 15 euro with like a glass of rosé and like two or three courses. And I was just like, this is getting a sweet green salad, or not even, like it's more to get a salad at Sweet Green than it is to have lunch in a vineyard in France. I mean, that's crazy, but that's the reality. And there's been some pushback from locals in places that the cost is going up because there's a lot of tourists or there's a lot of foreigners, a lot of digital nomads. But I think, you know, in general, like if you're living in a country where the cost of living is prohibitively high and you can leave and go somewhere else and have the same standard of living or higher for the same price, then, you know, go for it. I just got microneedling. I got a package of three. It was 70 pounds each for a session of microneedling. And my mom told me in the US, it's like $300 or $400.
So insane when you start really looking at like what you were paying before, that you sometimes do actually, not sometimes, I would say majority of the time save money. I think where the costs start to incur, like you said, is the baggage fees and constantly switching country to country. That has been what's killed my budget this year. But to your point, I was in Mexico City and I was getting blowouts for $17. And, you know, getting my nails done was $20. And in New York City, I was just there and I was like, let me get my nails done again. And it was $150. I'm like,
it's
okay.
Crazy. Yeah. Well, I refuse. I'm renting a DJ studio for an hour here costs me £10 per hour. And yesterday I got an email from my old studio in Miami, 1 hour, $120.
Wow.
Versus £10. And it just is everything, no matter what it is, it's going to be cheaper somewhere else. And when I was 23 living in Costa Rica, got my nails done every month, went to the spa, got a facial, got a massage, had a full-time maid for $20 a day who did all my laundry, cleaned the house, helped me with food prep, went grocery shopping. I had like such a great standard of living, and I was just out of college. And I was like, people would not believe that. Yeah. My cost of living was like $2,500 a month. I think where it starts to go up is the transportation and flights, trains, Ubers, rental cars, whatever. And then also if you run your own business, like we do, my business expenses dwarf my living expenses. I wish I'm like, I wish I just had normal living expenses, but no, I'm paying, you know, just thousands and thousands of dollars a month for virtual assistants, video editors, subscription services for software and all that other stuff. So it's like, I miss the days where I could just be a digital nomad with like a normal job. Or I worked real estate. So I worked with real estate commissions, but I didn't have any business expenses, you know? So consider that as well. If you become an entrepreneur, you'll have a lot of overhead costs.
Oh, 100%. And that's kind of a good case to move to a cheap country while you're building your business, because you can use more of your money on your business. Like in Cape Town,
yeah,
I got a 5-hour photo shoot with a makeup artist that did my hair, like the whole thing all in, like end to end was $600. I remember in Orlando, I got a photo shoot for 2 hours, nothing included but like 50 images, and that was $600. So just know that production costs, like hiring people in different countries, et cetera, that can keep your costs low. And if you want to save money and, you know, have your rent be low, go to a cheaper country and then use the extra money on growing your business.
Yeah, totally.
Well, Kristen, I know we could probably talk for 8 more hours about digital nomad lifestyle and traveling, but I know you have so many resources. Can you share some of them and where people can connect with you?
Yeah. So if people want help getting started in the digital nomad lifestyle, I wrote the book on that. It's called Digital Nomads for Dummies, like all, you know, the QuickBooks for Dummies or Ice Skating for Dummies, like anything for dummies. So it's Digital Nomads for Dummies. That book is available anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, et cetera. And then I have a weekly podcast called Badass Digital Nomads that comes out every Tuesday on every podcast platform. And then also my YouTube channel is called Traveling with Kristen with a K. And I have about 400 videos over there about this lifestyle, including solo travel and things like that. And so if people want to connect with me, they can also head over to travelingwithkristen.com. And you can go to /subscribe to join my email list or /relocation if you want help with moving to another country.
Amazing. I will absolutely link all that in the show notes. Thank you so much. I travel all the time and I didn't even know half of the things you said. So this has been a super expansive conversation for me. I appreciate it.
I am going to go listen to this episode again, because like I said towards the end, I have traveled nonstop for the last year and I had never heard of half the things that Kristen was talking about. This is why I love connecting with people like Kristen on the podcast and love your feedback and hearing what you want to hear more of and what episodes and guests you loved. So tell us what you think. Tag Kristen in your Instagram stories, as well as myself at Chelsea Reif. Tell us what your biggest takeaway was from the episode. Shoot us a DM if you have any questions, and be sure to subscribe and support all our platforms. We love doing this work. We love demystifying the digital nomad lifestyle, and we can only do that with your feedback and support. I would love to know if you're going to travel, what questions you have, where you're going to go, and maybe even what you're scared of. Shoot me an Instagram message at Chelsea Reif or email me info@chelseareif.com or head to my website and contact me there. And let's not forget that there is a hotline that you can call into. So if you go to my show notes, there's a link to leave a voice note. And if you leave it, I will answer your question on air and stitch it into the episode so we can help all the listeners that tune into this show. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to leave your review on Apple Podcasts so you can be entered into the 20-minute laser coaching giveaway. I'll see you in the next episode and hopefully at an airport soon.